This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Tons and tons of things to talk about, including the World Cup. But before we get on to World Cup things, I'd like to give my chosen quote of the day to you, if I may.
Oh, I'd love this.
Is a quote that comes from Nikki Haley.
Mm-hmm.
And she said the following, which I absolutely loved. If Biden gets back into the Iran deal, then the next president will shred it on her first day in office.
Wow. Wow.
You got to love Nikki Haley, don't you?
Oh, I love that on so many different levels, because I've been wondering, in fact, I've asked a couple of experts, what happened to Nikki Haley? Why isn't she, why aren't we hearing more of her? But that's a great statement.
So I love that statement. Now on to things about the World Cup. Not only is beer... alcohol being outlawed in Qatar, but unfortunately also cooked kosher food and public Jewish prayer. Apparently those are things that are also not being allowed during the course of the World Cup. We do know that Israel and Qatar don't have diplomatic relations. We also know that special arrangements have been put in place to allow Israeli fans to visit Qatar. There's quite a contingent of Israeli fans in Qatar, and indeed eventually a direct flight which was set up to Qatar, the very, very first flight ever between Israel and Qatar. And of course, during a time when there is no, when there are no diplomatic relations between the two countries. But it was understood that there would be cooked kosher food on sale for those who are observing the laws of Kashrut, and that public prayer would be allowed. Apparently those two things have also now not been allowed. So you could imagine this little group of people somewhere in the back room in Qatar eating salt beef sandwiches, drinking beer and davening mincha together, all in the dark.
It's absurd. What have they got against Tzimis?
Howard, I have really no idea how to answer that question, but I think it falls into the same category as alcohol somehow.
Wow, wow. But I mean, it's just phenomenal and embarrassing, really, for FIFA. If it wasn't bad enough that everybody knew how they won this, the fact that they are completely uncompromising and unwelcoming is just beyond words.
I think, you know, the way that I would see it is that on the one hand, they've really gone beyond what they would normally do. I mean, the fact that they're allowing Israelis in, for example, is a significant compromise. And I think we need to recognize.
Right, but they can't eat Jews without food, Anthony.
Well,
I mean, I'm panicking just thinking about it. There. Yeah.
All your favorite things, Howard, they'll turn vegan while they're there.
And not drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I do agree with you that there is something to be said about this place is not appropriate for an event like that. If we can't manage the basic things that are required, then perhaps we need to think about somewhere else. And of course, we know that there are more than one or two places that are willing and have a strong desire to host the World Cup. So, yeah. Anyway, let's hope that we can get on and enjoy the football and avoid the sideshow, of which I'm sure we haven't heard the end of yet.
For sure not. Nor this story, unfortunately. The battle continues to try and form a government and to allocate key portfolios. It's not simple, is it?
It's not simple, and it's not going particularly smoothly. So let's just try and take a status check of where we're at right now. The latest, and I'll start from the end and then we'll go backwards. The latest is an announcement yesterday by Otzma Yehudit, which is the faction led by Itamar Ben-Gvir. And he has effectively broken away now from the faction that is led by Bezalel Smotrich. They came together. They were on a united list when they went to the election. They have now broken away. They've taken each of their factions separately to sit separately in the Knesset, not as a united front, as a united party. We are told that this was always their plan. I was very surprised, to be honest, that they've chosen to break up and to go back to their constituent parts. But when you think about the things that divide them rather than the things that unite them. And I think it's understandable that they're sitting separately rather than together, because they certainly have a lot of things that are not uniting in the way that they approach things. But it's interesting that Ben-Gvir has said that even though he's breaking away from Smotrich and they will effectively be sitting separately in the Knesset and also negotiating a coalition agreement separately, that he will not agree to go into a coalition without Smotrich being happy with whatever he gets. So they are still somehow supporting each other, but they are not working as a united group at the moment. And I think to some degree that weakens their strength in the negotiations to enter the coalition. So that's the latest thing that happened yesterday. But really, most of the attention has been surrounding Shas leader Arya Dery and whether or not he can take up a position in the government. The Attorney General last week was asked to rule as to whether Arya Dery is fit to stand as a minister in the government. And we know that the ministry that he really wants is the Ministry of Finance. That's the one that he has his heart set on getting. Let's just remember that Arya Dery was found guilty of fraud and moral turpitude for events that happened while he was Minister of the Interior. He served a prison sentence. He actually went to jail and served a prison sentence for that. And that was done and dusted and moved. He was released from prison and he moved on to bigger and better things. He was also elected to the last Knesset, the one immediately before this one. Now, while he was a member of that Knesset, he was then charged with tax-related offenses. Right. And he entered into a plea bargain in order to deal with these tax-related offenses. And as part of that plea bargain, moral turpitude was not one of the things that he admitted to. And he agreed to step down from his seat in the Knesset. So in February of this year, earlier this year, he actually stepped down from the Knesset. He entered into this plea bargain where he agreed to a one-year suspended sentence in return for effectively stepping away from the Knesset and in return for him not being charged with moral turpitude. Now, the Attorney General has come out saying that even though he wasn't charged with moral turpitude and even though he is currently serving a suspended sentence, right, as opposed to a prison sentence, he is not fit to take up a position in the government. The Shas faction are saying, well, the fact that he is serving a suspended sentence is different and he should be allowed to carry out a government ministry and in particular should be able to pick up the defense ministry. But the Attorney General has made her statement and now apparently the issue goes to the chairman of the election committee, who is due to rule as to whether a person who is on a suspended sentence can actually serve as a minister in government. So this will be a ruling by the chairman of the Central Elections Committee, who is also a High Court Justice, Yitzhak Amit. He will rule on whether this constitutes moral turpitude and whether, in fact, Dery can serve as a minister in government. And it seems as if the Shas already have their plans that if indeed the decision goes against them, they will go to the High Court in order to try to challenge that decision. And if that fails, then they might apply the so-called override clause, which we've already discussed. If the High Court decides one way, the Knesset might decide to overrule the High Court and nevertheless to allow Arya Dery to stand. I mean, what's interesting for me, and I think very, very significant, is that 71% of Israelis on the street do not think that Arya Dery is fit to serve as Minister of Finance. And I think that that is a very, very significant statement for the Prime Minister in waiting to think about, that 71% of this country feel that the person who is effectively standing on the threshold of taking over the Ministry of Finance, which is not an insignificant role in our government, is someone who that country does not respect and doesn't feel deserves to take up that position. That's the issue of Arya Dery. We also have Bezalel Smotrich, who is very, very keen to take on the Ministry of Defense. That's the role that he wants. The other issue, the incoming Prime Minister Netanyahu apparently does not wish to give him the Ministry of Defense. And apparently Netanyahu's plan is to try and give Smotrich the Ministry of Finance with some slimmed down portfolio. So take away the budgeting division from the Ministry of Finance, take away one or two other things, trim it down a little bit so that he doesn't have control over all of that stuff, but still make him the Ministry of Finance. That's what he's hoping to convince Smotrich of. But the problem for Netanyahu is much greater than that, because he's now finding that from within his Likud party, there is a groundswell of anti-feeling against him because of the fact that he seems to be giving away all the best jobs to people who are not in his own party. And so there are people within the Likud who have a desire to serve in a senior government role with a good ministry. Likud, after all, does have the most seats coming out of the recent election. And yet it seems as if though the Ministry of Defense, the Ministry of Finance, which are really two key positions, are going to be given to members of other parties. And within the Likud, that is not sitting very well right now.
Right. So is there a chance that, it's certainly looking like we're moving more further and further away from a successful coalition agreement, or is this just par for the course?
It looks like, well, first of all, it is par for the course. Let's start with that. This is effectively how things work in Israel, whether ultimately we're able to reach a coalition agreement or not. The route to get there is never, ever simple. However, it would be fair to say that as things stand right now, with Ben-Gvir having said, we're not going to be part of these coalition negotiations any longer because we were promised an additional ministry, and that's apparently now been taken away from the Otzma Yehudit faction in the most recent discussions, and therefore they've ceased negotiations. We've got Dery, who's not happy. We've got Smotrich, who's not happy. We've got members of the Likud who are not happy. It does look like things are moving further and further away from us being able to achieve a coalition agreement. And at some point, Netanyahu has actually been quoted as saying he would rather go to another election than agree to some of the things which are being demanded of him. Now, to what extent this is brinkmanship and to what extent this is just negotiating tactics, and that at the last minute people will suddenly fall into place and compromise when they understand that the alternative is to go to an election, it's unclear to me right now. But all I can say is that what seemed to be a relatively smooth and easy path, a shoe-in, some people thought, because the coalition seemed to have been stitched together even before the election, is not proving to be quite as simple as all that.
Wow. Fascinating. It's very, very interesting. Israel has offered assistance to Gaza when the fire broke out in the residential area. What's the latest here?
So this was a fire that broke out on Thursday night in the Gaza Strip. And apparently this was a fire that broke out in a residential area of the Jabalia refugee camp in Gaza. Unfortunately, there were 25 residents who were killed in this fire, including 7 children. And that there were obviously many, many more casualties aside from those who were killed. And there was a footage that was circulating on social media showing a whole residential building that had caught fire in this refugee camp in the north of the Gaza Strip. And there was a lot of flames and smoke, and apparently screaming could be heard from people who couldn't be reached in this fire. So very, very, very dramatic scenes and very concerning scenes. And Defense Minister Benny Gantz immediately tweeted his condolences on behalf of the Israeli government to the people of Gaza. And he went on to say that Israel will help the residents of Gaza as much as possible, including opening up the borders to allow casualties to be treated outside of Gaza, to allow emergency services to go in. So Israel did whatever it was able to do in order to assist this particular tragic event. It was interesting that the president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, who, by the way, was very visible yesterday in Qatar at the opening ceremony, he declared a day of mourning. Which is quite unusual because we do know that there is this antagonism between Hamas-ruled Gaza and the Fatah-ruled Palestinian Authority area. But the Palestinian Authority president did declare a day of mourning as a result of this fire, which unfortunately took 21 lives. But Israel did whatever it could, and I don't think there was any accusation leveled anywhere.
No, certainly there wasn't. The one conversation that we had on Friday when you weren't here, and in fact we got into this whole discussion, because a lot of the reports talk about this as this refugee camp. And I'm saying, well, what makes it a refugee camp? It's a city. It's a town. It's their buildings. And the fact that we even just repeating what – and there was even a reference to refugee camp in times of Israel. It's – what's your thought on this, Anthony? I mean, I know we've got very little time to talk about it. We can do it tomorrow. But I just wanted your thoughts.
Just a very quick thought, and I'd be happy to open this up for broader discussion and pick it up tomorrow. But the – the idea of the refugees is something which has been perpetuated by those who try to keep the Palestinian story in the news. We see these refugee camps not only in Gaza, but also in Jordan and in Syria and in other surrounding countries, because the idea has been to try and keep the so-called Palestinian
people. But in Jordan,
it's
different, because these are displaced people. In Gaza, it's a very different story. Why they're refugees?
Well, why are they refugees in Jordan when they've been there for 50 or 60 years and raised children and grandchildren? Why are they still refugees? The refugees are long gone. The refugees are the people who actually physically escaped on the day. And they can be refugees while they're displaced forever. I mean, we have refugees who came to Israel as well. Refugee camps were set up, but those people were quickly resettled. And Israel worked in order to get rid of the notion of refugees because we wanted people to be settled here. The opposite is true of these people who left of their own volition or were forced out for whatever reason during 1948 when the Arab side decided not to pick up and run with the second state that was offered by the United Nations. And so the idea of the refugees has been perpetuated in order to create a narrative, which they successfully do.
And that's where we leave it. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9. Chai FM, good morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.